Welcome to Ambit Energy's Ambitious 50, presented by Ambitious Radio. Whether you are a new marketing consultant, national consultant, or someone considering the Ambit opportunity, if you are looking to be motivated, inspired, and uncover what it takes to get to the next level, listening will be well worth the investment of your time. We have weekly engaging conversations with some of today's most influential Ambit leaders as they discuss their successes, failures, tipping points, and other priceless information that you can go apply immediately to your business after listening. Now, here's your host, Doug Parker.
All right, welcome back to another edition of Ambit Energy's Ambitious 50, brought to you by Ambitious Radio and the Ambitious Radio Network. Today we have a fantastic guest, as we always get on this show, and we get lots of great information. We are so appreciative of the people that spend the time to invest in Ambit Nation and really let us know about their ups, their downs, their all-arounds in the business over the years. Today we've got Jordy Buckingham. He's an executive consultant, and he is a young gun. He's out there making it happen. And as a young man, that was one of the original My Ambit stories. He has spoken to thousands at Ambition, and he has been on the cover of multiple Success From Home magazines and is actually featured in this year's, he's on the cover, but he's also one of the featured stories on the inside titled Young Guns. So, Jordan, welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, thanks a lot, Doug. Great to be here.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Well, I tell you what, man, you know, we always want to jump in and just kind of talk about life before Ambit and kind of your why at that time in life. So let's do that. Tell us about what life was like before you were introduced to Ambit, and what were you doing at that time?
Oh, absolutely. Well, first off, thanks so much for having me on the line. I feel like I'm among an incredible group of speakers. I'm actually a big fan of the Ambitious 50 radio show. I listen to it all the time, so for inspiration and guidance. So it really is a big deal for me to get on here, and I do appreciate you inviting me on. But yeah, absolutely. I'll tell you a little bit about my background. So when I found out about Ambit Energy, I was serving tables at Joe's Crab Shack. I brought people their food. I really didn't have any influence with anybody in my life, and I was actually getting a petroleum engineering degree at the University of Texas at Austin at the time. So basically just a broke college student trying to make it through school. And whenever I first found out about the business, I thought it was a great way to make a couple extra $100 a month, just because, I mean, I was struggling to make a couple $100 a month to pay all my bills and be able to eat. I mean, I remember a lot of times there were moments where I'd look at my bank account and see $10 or $12 in there and think, all right, well, I'm not making any money again serving tables again till Friday, so I'm really going to have to wing it on this $12, you know, ramen noodles and blue box mac and cheese to make it through the end of the week. So yeah, I mean, things definitely were not financially then as they are now. So I'm super grateful to have found the opportunity, because back in the day, I was just a broke college student trying to get it done.
Yeah, absolutely. So you went through that and you were, you know, now how did you find out about the business?
Dad called me one day, and he's made a lot of money in his life. He's in the oil and gas business, and he had actually been in network marketing before. And he called me one day and said, son, I found something that's going to make us a lot of money. And he'd made a lot of money in his life, obviously, so I listened to him. And it actually turned out my dad was in Excel Telecommunications a long time ago. So whenever he saw Ambit and he saw the co-founders and he saw the leadership behind it and he saw that they were going to rock electricity, he decided to get involved because it just made a lot of sense. He made good money in telecom, and he figured we make good money in electricity.
Sure, sure. No, that makes a lot of sense. And so your why was you're just trying to figure out a way to replace a couple hundred extra dollars a month when you first started. Now let's fast forward for just a moment, because you're an executive consultant now. And for those that are listening, you know, this is not exclusively for Ambit consultants. So there's kind of a progression where you come in as a marketing consultant, and then you get promoted to regional consultant, then it's senior consultant, and that's where I'm currently at, but not for long. Then it's executive consultant, where Jordan is, which is it's next to the very, very top, which is national consultant. So you have promoted multiple times and are one step away from the very top rung on the ladder. So let's talk about that. What and how has your why matured and changed over the years?
Well, you know, it kind of comes in a story form. You know, initially I thought it was a great way to make a couple extra $100 a month, because at the time I was doing petroleum engineering courses at UT, which were really difficult in serving tables. So what I figured is if I could make an extra $200 or $300 a month, I could replace two or three serving shifts. And whenever I had final exams and stuff coming up, I'd be able to spend more time and more focus on my final exams. So I got involved, and Doug, I was able to do just that. I mean, making a couple few extra $100 a month in ambit really isn't that complicated. It's just something you have to put your head down and do. But once I executed that and was able to achieve the couple $100 a month standpoint, what started to happen was I'd go to these events and I'd see other people who were making a lot more money. I'd go to events and I'd see other people who weren't just treating it like a couple $100 a month. They were treating it like a lifestyle differentiator, something that they could actually execute to build a full-time income with. And what started to happen was my mind started to evolve on what was possible here. So originally it was a couple $100 a month. And then I thought, you know, if I could make a couple extra $100 a week, you know, that would be a big deal, because then you're talking about $6,000 a month. And, you know, that was a really big deal to me as a college student. So ultimately, I started to shift my sights on making a little bit more money, and I was able to do that. But then finally, I graduated from petroleum engineering school with $75,000 in student debt. And I didn't want to live with that debt my whole life, Doug. So what happened was my why shifted again. I had been to enough events to know that money could be made here. I had seen enough people that had executed on a big level to know that you could really make whatever kind of money you wanted to make. But at that point, things got real for me, because I all of a sudden had a $3,000 a month student loan payment that was due because I had agreed to pay my student loans back in 24 months. So I was just in a position that I seriously needed a serious secondary income stream, or I was going to have to move back in with my dad. So, you know, once you've been free in Austin for 4 years, that's just a difficult proposition. So that's when I got more serious about my ambit business. And it was at that point that I shifted my sights to making a couple extra $1,000 a month, you know, that extra $2,000 or $3,000 a month, you know, the kind of money that you need to pay a mortgage, pay a car payment, pay your insurances, you know, build a real life. I needed that secondary income stream to be able to do those things. So ultimately, it executed to that point, and I was able to buy my first home, beautiful home in San Angelo, Texas, 1,700 square foot, brand new 2011 built home. And the first mortgage I ever paid in my life, and all the expenses associated with that place, I paid with the part-time money that I made in ambit that month. You know, so if you look at the progression and you just look at the way my mind was evolving, originally it was a couple hundred a month, then it was a couple hundred a week, and then I was looking to make a couple thousand a month, you know, to be able to start to support my bills. So it was really at that point, once I started to execute at that level, now, you know, making that couple $1,000 a month really brought things home to me, because there were commas, you know what I mean, in things. And it was like you start adding things up and it's like, holy cow, I made $2,000 this month, or holy cow, I made $2,200 this month. And when you can start to execute that 5 to 10 hours a week on a part-time basis, then it's just really difficult for your brain not to blow up into what's possible, you know. And ultimately what happened for me was, as that evolved, I paid off the $75,000 in student debt in 24 months, ended up paying that off. And then that's when things got real, because I was looking at my bills and I was looking at my ambit income, and I was like, oh my God, this could be a freedom vehicle for me if I would treat it more seriously. So, you know, up my game a little bit from 5 to 10 hours a week to 10 or 15 hours a week. And then I started setting my sights on, how do I build a lifestyle type income? Not a couple thousand a month, but a couple thousand a week, you know, $2,000 or $3,000 a week. Because I knew that if I could be making $6,000, $8,000, $10,000 a month from my ambit energy business, that I wouldn't need to have another job. And that's what I began to execute towards. So that's kind of the progression of the why. And ultimately, Doug, what's amazing is that we always talk about how important that why is, but it was literally the executed progression of the why that just kept me gunning for something else, gunning for that next piece, gunning for that next income level. And what happened was I kept hitting it. You know what I mean? So, I mean, I got to that point where I was making commas in my weekly checks on a very part-time basis. I looked up, I had more money coming in from my ambit business than I had going out in my bills, and I was financially free. So I was able at that point to walk away from the engineering career at 28 years old and pursue my ambit energy business full time. And Doug, to finish that little piece up, I'm so glad I did now, man, because my weekly checks often pay my monthly bills, and I'm totally financially free. Actually, right now, as we're doing this recording, I'm feeling a beautiful breeze throw in my window in sunny Southern California, visiting my grandparents. So it's just so awesome, man, to have the time freedom and the financial freedom to get to do what you choose to do in life. So back to you, brother.
Yeah, man, that is great stuff. So now let's talk about, you know, you're a young guy, you know, you're out there, you're definitely high energy, pun intended, and you know, you're making it happen. But when you bump into someone, you know, kind of, can you give me the 15 to 20 second, you know, elevator pitch, if you will, of what you tell someone when they say, "Hey, man, Jordan, what is it that you do?"
Oh, absolutely. Well, you know, I'm going to prelude that a little bit to tell you that whenever you're young like me, there are specific challenges in the business. One of those being I hadn't had an established reputation in anything else in my life yet. I mean, when I found Ambit, I was serving tables at Joe's Crab Shack going to college. So, you know, I don't walk up to somebody and say, "I've got this $1 million business idea." You know what I mean? And anybody like, "Here's your bucket of crab. Would you like to make $1 million in this part-time business?" So nobody's going to listen to what a young kid like me has to say. So I had to come up with ways in the coal market to build trust. And secondly, when it comes to the elevator pitch, that was really important to me because I had moved to Texas from Tennessee, which is a non-deregulated market. And when I got to Texas, Doug, I didn't have a sphere of influence here. I didn't have a written list to speak of at all because I just didn't know anybody here. So it was really important for me to develop that 15 to 20 second thing that I could lay down to gain some interest. So my basic pitch is, if I am talking to somebody, I'm going to do form, which is family, occupation, recreation, and money. You know, basically talk to people about what's going on in their life. And then whenever it gets around to, you know, what do you do, then this is that 15 to 20 seconds that comes out. It usually sounds like, "I'm spearheading the expansion of an energy company out of Dallas into some major markets. Right now, my focus is West Texas and specifically the San Angelo market. And I'm actually looking for a few sharp people to help me do that. And I was just curious, you know, on top of what you're currently doing, do you at all keep your options open in terms of creating any cash flow on top of what you're currently doing now as an accountant," or whatever it was whenever I talked to him. But that little thing is basically, "I'm spearheading the expansion of an energy company out of Dallas into some major markets. Right now, my focus is West Texas," wherever you are, you know, you can throw in your focus, "and specifically San Angelo, and I'm looking for a few sharp people to help me do that." So that was basically it, Doug, my 15 to 20 seconds. And I can tell you, I've said that hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of times to see if I could get any interest from somebody to add a new name to my contact base.
You know, the interesting thing is, guys, this is a good time to hit the pause button and rewind and listen to that a couple more times. Now, I don't know this for sure, okay? I'm gonna speculate here a little bit, but my assumption is that there's some fingerprints of Steve Thompson somewhere in that little presentation right there.
That was Steve Thompson entirely, because I went to Steve, and what was happening was I was trying to use some of the normal kind of pitches, but as a young person, some things can come off condescending, and I'm just saying that, you know, a certain way. So if I try to come in and act like a big dog and act like I know what I'm talking about in the energy space and I'm all this and I'm all that and I've got this big business, people actually could be offended because I'm a kid, you know what I mean? You know what I mean? And I'm like, so sometimes the rhetorical questions, just being straight up real with you, would backfire on me because Well, how many people do you know that use electricity? Sometimes as a young person, if I said that to like a 50-year-old man who had made a couple $1 million in his life and was financially free and retired, he would kind of take that offensively. You know what I mean? So I went to Steve and I was like, "Dude, I'm saying this to people and I'm getting like serious kickback. Like, it's not good." And he was like, "Well, you need to try this spearheading line." And I was like, "Well, how does that work?" And he told it to me just like I told it to you. But here's what I did with that. I wrote it down, spearheading the expansion of an energy company out of Dallas and some major markets. And I wrote it down in his words and mine, just right there on paper. But here's the one thing that I did different than a lot of other people. Some people will listen to a training or they'll hear a tidbit like that and they'll go, "Man, that's cool. I think I'm going to try to apply that." Whenever I learn something that I think is going to be really fruitful for me, I literally just ingrain it into my brain and I totally immerse in the concept. So what I did was I actually took that line, and I got to tell you the backstory on this, Doug, because it's funny. I was making calls one day and I had a guy ask me the "what is it" question. So basically I had said, you know, "Did I catch an okay time to chat for a second? Are you busy?" "No, this is good. Well, what do you need? And I went into the invitation process, and he came back with the "what is it" question. And at the time, I wasn't trained on different things to come back with. So I'm like this young kid, and I started to go into the three questions. How many people do you know that use electricity or natural gas? Of them, how many would like to pay less or potentially get it for free? And if I could show you a program to capitalize on that financially, would you be open to taking a look at it? I tried to go into that, and about halfway through the second question, he said, "Kid, I don't know what you're talking about, but I'm not interested." Bam! And he hung up the phone on me. And I remember as a young man trying to make these calls, trying to get outside my comfort zone, that stung. I mean, that hurt really bad because I was kind of doing what I was taught to do, but it was just, I was just getting terrible results. So I looked at that phone and I said, that is never going to happen to me again. And I just made a decision that that wasn't going to happen to me again. I didn't want to be in a position where I was backed into a corner on them asking me what it is and, you know, them being able to pound me in. So that's whenever I reached out to Steve. He gave me that line. And whenever he told me the line, Doug, I took it and I read it to myself 500 times in a row. And then I set it down, and I said it to myself another 500 times in a row, 1,000 times in a row, until it was just beat into my head so hard that if somebody poked me in the ribs in the middle of the night, I could pop out of bed and say, I'm spearheading the expansion of an energy company out of Dallas and in some major markets right now. My focus is West Texas and specifically San Angelo. I'm looking for a few sharp people to help me do that. Bam, you know? So I'd be ready. I had to be ready whenever that came at me because I wasn't going to feel that again. I didn't want to feel like they could put me in the corner and beat me down with a hammer. So I just figured out a few ways by talking to really smart people that have been there, done that to, you know, more strongly posture myself and put myself in a position that that I would know what to say whenever it came at me. So sorry that was a little long-winded, but I got to tell you, that was one of the biggest transformations in my life because once I figured out that there were words that I could say, there was a skill set that I could develop that would put me in a situation where I would be stronger postured, even as a young man, I got really excited about it, and obviously I executed.
Well, you know what? That's interesting. You know, nobody puts Jordan in a corner.
Okay? That's right. So. Nobody puts baby in a corner.
That's great. So, hey, so let's talk about the kind of success. You know, what would you say is one of the personal habits that's most contributed to your success?
You know, it's really a mindset thing, and it's a natural, intentional bent on optimism. So one of the things that I've always done is anytime I was shooting for a goal, I would put that goal down on paper and just get it dead set in my mind that I was going to hit it. And whenever I hit certain obstacles or different things, I never allowed those things to bow me out of the race. I just tried to figure out ways around my obstacles to move into a successful track. But to tell you the truth, I think one of the things that contributed most to my success in a daily habit was a review of my personal goals. I actually have a document called The Life I Choose, where I wrote out in specific detail the life that I intended to live. You know, they tell you to do it at every single training, but the number of people that actually write down the type of life that they want to live is actually pretty rare. So what I would do is every day, I would evaluate that document and look at it, and I would ask myself a pretty simple question. What can I do today to get closer to living that life? And when it comes to anything else, in my opinion, you really got to get your mind in a space where you're connecting with what's important to you, because that is what's going to drive you to move through whatever you run into that day. As long as I was completely centered and focused on what I wanted to bring into my life, then it seemed like everything else just kind of fell into place. But that was my daily habit of really just evaluating what I wanted.
You know, that's good stuff. And that now, is that a document that you share with people, or is that just a personal document for you?
You know, I share it with some people. It's actually pretty rare, but it's just because it's everything, man. It's what I want in my family. It's the type of spouse that I want it to be with. I even talk about my future children and the home that I want to live in, the type of area that I want to be in, the type of relationship I want to have with my family, the financial goals that I'm shooting for. Like, basically, there are four areas of lifestyle that are really important. Number one is not specifically in this order. They're kind of like four legs of a table, but you've got your physical body. It's important to maintain your physical body. You've got your spirituality, that is your connection to your source, whatever you want to do in that area. You've got your relationships, you know, those relationships in your life that are important to cultivate. And then finally, you've got your income, your work, you know, that thing that you do in your life to sustain yourself financially. And for me, I had goals basically built around those four things in the beginning. And in the beginning, Doug, that document was 8 pages, double-spaced. It really didn't have a tremendous amount of stuff in it, but I talked about what I wanted my physical body to be like. I talked about what I wanted the relationships in my life to be like. I talked about what I wanted to do on a financial level and the work that I wanted to do. And I talked about my spirituality and my connection to source and what was important to me. So originally it was 8 pages double spaced, and now it's evolved to 23 pages single spaced. It's not a joke. I mean, I got very intentional on building my life. And to tell you the truth, I haven't hit it yet. I mean, my goals are very big. The life that I intend to live are really big. And the evolution of that document was important. It's kind of like one of the original questions you asked me. You asked me about the why. And as my why evolved, so did that document. But I always keep it out in front of me. You know, I never want to be looking back at my document to say, well, I've already achieved all of those things. I guess it's not really important for me to hit anything else in life. You know, it seems like the document is always evolving past what I've currently achieved.
You know, that's great information. And one of the things that you've mentioned a couple times in this recording is, number one, you talked about repetition. You know, you talked about when Steve Thompson told you that information, you wrote it down. You went back and practiced it over and over and over and over and over and over again until you said something about you get poked in the gut in the middle of the night or something. You rattled it off. You know, that's how you get where you're going, guys. So, you know, just because you've heard it one time in a training, you thought, oh, that was good, and you wrote it down. Repetition is the mother of learning. So you've got to go through this stuff over and over again. And if there's something that you hear in this recording, listen to it again. You may be an auditory learner, or if you are more of a visual or more of a kinesthetic type learner, you may have to write it down and go over it a couple times. But Jordan has given some nuggets of wisdom, here today, where he's really talking about the things that he may not have gone over the 23 pages of everything that he personally has in there, but he went over the things that you need to have to put together a document like that. So go back and rewind it. Write those things down and start putting together your document for life. What is it that you want to look like? And if you can't envision it, then you'll probably wind up somewhere else other than where you want to be. So that's really some great stuff, Jordan. I appreciate you sharing that with us. And the reason why I ask about that document, and it sounds like it's very sophisticated and probably it's too much personal information to put on public display. But everything that we do on Ambitious Radio, we have a show notes page. And so we will put a link to Jordan on ambitiousradio.com, where you can go back in and look at some of these things, maybe some of the books that he mentions, maybe some of the quotes, things like that. But we will put a show notes page together for him. And that's why I was asking about that. I don't know if you have a format, you know, that doesn't have the actual answers or your personal information. And if you do, send it over to me. I'm happy to upload that and put it on the page as well. But if not, no worries at all.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we'll look into that. I'll look at my document and see if, you know, because I do have like headers and subheaders on basically kind of what I've executed. But I can tell you one of the best resources to help you put a document like that together is Carlos Marin's new book, The Ultimate Success Formula. He's very big on visualization. He's very big on getting clear on what you want in life. And my actually updated document, that is the 23 pages single spaced, was basically directly based on what he teaches in the book and how to put that together. So to tell you the truth, I think the best way to go about that would just be get your hands on a copy of that book. I know a lot of people already have, but get into the part where he talks about goals and writing it down and the execution of your life vision. And that's one of the clearest resources on developing that I've ever seen.
Fantastic. So I'll put definitely show notes, you know, to the book and make sure I put some links there. Now let's dig in a little bit. You talk about execution, so let's get into the business side of things. So whenever you are talking to someone that's a potential consultant, maybe you've given them that presentation, the expansion in the San Angelo area, and then they say, oh, you know, that sounds great and everything, but, you know, I want to think about it or something along those lines. What's the number one objection that you get, and then how do you overcome that objection?
You know, the number, well, there are two formats of a rejection that you're going to get if you really boil it down. The first type of rejection is a limiting belief in themselves. So it manifests itself in a number of different ways, but for me, whenever I get it, it always points back to a limiting belief in themselves and their ability to do the business. The second type is a limiting belief in the model. So what I like to do whenever I get an objection is I like to see which category the objection is in. And if it's a limiting belief in themselves, that's rather difficult to overcome because the objection itself is hard to deal with because it's not usually 99% of the time, it's not the objection that they're saying. You know what I'm saying? So if somebody says, you know what, I'd like to do that, but I don't have the money to do that. Well, it's $75 and $25 to get your website started right now, $100 out of pocket. I've been broke in my life, but I've never been in a situation where I couldn't get my hands on $100 if I really wanted it. You know what I mean? So mm-hmm. So that's not a real objection. Secondly, you know, it looks good, but I don't think I have time to do that. That's also a limiting belief in themselves, you know. I don't think I'm going to be able to execute on that. Or there are a bunch of them, but the next one that I'll share is a limiting belief in the model. So that is going to be, you know what, it looks interesting, but I need to do a little bit more research. Okay, so now they're gonna say, all right, well, I'm not sure A, that I believe that network marketing will work, but B, I gotta go check out this company. So if you can divide it into one of those two categories, then you can swing back around to the way that you're gonna handle the objection. Okay, so if it's a limiting belief in the model, that's whenever you need to cover the Inc. 500, you need to cover the accolades, you need to cover the Better Business Bureau and J.D. Power and Associates, you need to cover those strong points. And if they say they're going to go do more research, say, you know what, I totally understand, and most likely when people do research, they're going to Google it. So this is what I would recommend, and I've got an email that I'll send to somebody to get them started in their research. So that's a limiting belief in the model. Limiting belief in themselves, what I try to do is just schedule more time to prove that Ambit could work for them. And that conversation kind of goes like this. It's based on what Brian McClure is teaching right now with the paradigm shift. But I'll just say, hey, listen, I totally understand that you don't think you have time to do this business. And, you know, I know how you feel because I felt the same way. And what I found was I could do it on a part-time basis. So basically Steve Thompson's feel, felt, found is what I use to overcome most objections. But what I'm going to do then is say, if I could show you how we could make $75 to $100 an hour doing this very part-time and do that with an hour or two of your time, would it be worth another couple hours of your time to see if this business would work for you? And at that point, I'm going to see if the objection is a real objection, meaning like they really don't feel like they have time or they really don't feel like they have the money, or if they were just saying that to try to get out of telling me no. Because some people don't like to say no. They don't want to say, Jordan, I don't want to do this business. You know what I mean? So they give me all sorts of crazy objections. So essentially, once I come back to that, I'm just going to open up the floor and say, would it be worth our time to see if Ambit will work for you if I did most of the work? And typically at that point, Doug, they're going to break it out and either submit to giving me the other 2 hours to see if Amber will work for them, or they're going to give me another excuse. And really what I'm hearing is no, you know, at that point, if they do the excuse.
Sure, that makes sense. Now, let's talk about customers. So you talked to somebody about becoming a customer, and maybe you had presented them the opportunity, and they said, well, hey, at least maybe be my customer, or it's a dynamic which that wasn't how it came about. But they say, you know, oh, that's great. Hey, I want to think about it or whatever. You know, it's they're with that company down the street that you know, I won't say their name, but their initials are TXU. You know, they're paying whatever rate, and you know, we could blow the doors off of that rate. So, you know, logically, the math, it's overwhelming why they should do business with us. Mm-hmm. However, they're just kind of on the fence, or you know, not open to it. So it seems. How do you overcome that objection?
I always go directly to the why, because when I approach a customer, I'm asking them a pretty simple question. If it wouldn't inconvenience you in any way, it won't cost you anything, it'd actually save you a little bit of money, and it would, and it's really important to me, would you do me a favor, right? So essentially, when I get my hands on their energy bill, if I go into the logical side of the rate and how much money they're going to save, and it's 0.2 cents a kilowatt or 0.8 cents a kilowatt or, you know, whatever difference from what they're currently paying, then I'm going to be taking them down a path that I don't want them to go down. Because if I go the logical route, then I'm putting myself in a bucket with 50 other energy providers that they could choose from that might be able to beat me by 0.1 cents per kilowatt. But if I go into my why and the reason I'm building the business and show them, connect their decision with my life and what's important to me, if I have any sort of relationship with that person at all, I'm going to win. Because really all I have to do is get my hands on their energy bill, and I'm going to prove those three things. I'm going to prove that it's not going to inconvenience them anyway. I'll do the enrollment. It takes me 5 minutes. It's not going to cost them anything. There is no fee to switch to Ambit Energy. It's totally free. And then finally, it's going to save them a little bit of money. I don't have to save them a lot of money. I don't have to save them $50 or $100 a month. If I save them $5 or $10 a month, that's plenty, because now I can go to their energy bill and say, hey, John, well, like I said, it's not going to inconvenience you. I'll do the enrollment. It's not going to cost you anything. It's totally free to switch. And it looks like I can save you a couple bucks with the business. This is extremely important to me, John. As you know, I graduated with $75,000 in student debt, and I'm building this business on a part-time basis to try to keep my head above water as I live my life, you know, and move forward and get out of that student debt. And you could be a part of that by being my customer and supporting my business. So this is extremely important to me. Can I count on you to do me that favor if I can, you know, if it is not going to inconvenience you, cost you anything, and it will save you some money? So that's a long-winded explanation to say, go back to your why. And I know people hear that all the time, and it can kind of get annoying, because it's like, oh, the why. You know, it can be annoying until you try it. Because at the end of the day, I've done it both ways, Doug. I've tried to go the logical route, showing them that I'm going to save them $37 a month, and I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do that, and we're not going to have any – the lines and distribution are going to be included in the rate or in the other markets. It's just the supply side that changes or not. You know, all this crazy mumbo-jumbo stuff that they don't even understand. And what I find is I put myself in a boat that I don't want to be in when I go that route. Whereas if I stay in the why, and I stay with the connection to why I'm building this business and how they can be a part of me achieving what I want to achieve in life, then I win the majority of the time. So, you know, if it's something that sounds cheesy to you, if you think it's not something you want to do because you're one of those people that has trouble asking people for a favor, then just get outside your comfort zone a little bit, drop your ego, and try it. Because I'll tell you this, that person that's going to make that decision to help you is going to receive more benefit on a personal level by helping you than they would by saving the money. Because how often are we presented with opportunities to help, legitimately help support someone's life and help someone's business that we have the opportunity to take it up on? And how often are we truly appreciated for a decision that we make in our life? You know, most of the time they're not. So they're starving for that kind of energy, that kind of feeling in their life. And you can give them that feeling every month they pay their bill. They know they're helping you out, and that makes them feel good, and it makes them feel that altruism that they want to feel. So back to you, Doug. Hopefully that helps.
No, that's great information. I mean, it really is how, you know, you talk about the why and those kinds of things. Because, again, if you just get to raid and delivery and, all, like I said, all that mumbo jumbo, now you've turned into some kind of professional electricity salesperson, and then you're competing with this or that, and somebody, if they're 1/10 of a cent per kilowatt cheaper, then that's definitely where they're going to go, or whatever. It changes it from being a relational interaction to a transactional interaction, and then it's, you know, in their mind, all things are equal, just who's the cheapest rate, and it's really what it's all about. So that's really great stuff. Now, you know, when it comes to people that have had an impact on your life, and it doesn't necessarily have to be Ambit related; it could be anyone. But who would you say has had the biggest impact on your life, and why?
You know, I'd like to break that into two pieces. Number one, the impact on my life, and number two, you know, one of the most recent impacts in my business, and one of the people that's mentoring me really strongly. And the number one thing is my father has had a huge impact on my life, and I'll tell you a few things behind that. You know, my dad has always had what Jerry Thompson talks about, which is grit. And I can tell you, Doug, there are times in my life that we weren't doing so well financially, but my dad never laid down. He never quit. He never just sat on the couch and said, it's just too much for me to handle. He always figured out a way to muster that one little bit more energy, that one little piece of energy that he needed to get up off the couch and go do what he needed to do. And I'll give you a little example of that. When my dad was in the oil business back in the early 80s, he had built a company up where his position in the company was worth about $3.5 million. And he sold out of it. In the early 80s, that was a lot of money, $3.5 million. But he took equity in the company as his payout, and they were going to pay him out over 20 or 30 years with, you know, a big equity position in the company. In 1985, he was a multimillionaire and had retired, had built his dream ranch, and was marrying my mom and having me and my sister. And in 1985, the bottom fell out of oil and gas. That company had a rig blowout and bankrupted, and he went from being worth $3.5 million to being worth nothing overnight. That happened 2 days before my sister was born in 1985, September 16th, 1985. The house was built on $3.5 million in equity. I mean, not much, but you know what I'm saying. My dad was a multimillionaire. He'd built his home and the ranch and everything around that financial portfolio. And my sister was born into a house that was broke, that we had no money and we had no equity. I was born 15 months and 1 day later. And the year before I was born, my dad made $250,000 in cash. Back in the 80s, that was a lot of money, in addition to his $3.5 million equity in that company. And the year I was born, my dad made $6,000 because it was just, you know, kind of the way that things shook out. So for the first few years of my life, we were broke, man. I mean, broke. My mom would make Fideo. It's like this vermicelli yellow box stuff that you get at the store for 25 cents. Mix that with some tomato paste and tomatoes and onions, and you can feed your family. And I remember 9 days in a row one time we had Fideo, and we didn't really know why, but my sisters finally flipped out, and they were like, you know, they were like, God, if I have Fideo one more day, I can't take it. But at the end of the day, that's what we could afford. That's all the money that we had. I mean, my parents sometimes were trying to make it on a couple weeks with a few dollars in the bank account, and we did what we had to do. But, you know, going back and looking at that, I really appreciate everything that we went through in our lives, because ultimately that was the biggest piece of my development. And I'm going to tell you this story. I think it'll really hit home for you on why my dad is, I think, the most influential person that's ever been in my life. When we were broke, I was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 years old whenever we were totally broke. My dad found Excel Communications back in the early 90s. And whenever he first found out about it, the story went down like this. So there was a guy named Daryl Hallmark. My dad was calling to try to sell little pieces of oil deals to try to make enough money to feed us. And he was calling the new money list, which is people that had come into a lot of money relatively quickly when they didn't have it before. And so he called this guy named Daryl Hallmark, and he asked him to participate in his deal, and he agreed to do it, but he asked my dad a pretty simple question. He said, "Hey, little buddy, I was just curious, are you making all the money you want to make selling them oil deals?" And my dad said, "No, I'm not making all the money I want to make. What have you got?" I mean, he didn't know it at the time, but we were three ranch payments behind, and we were about to lose our home. We were about to lose everything. I mean, it was, the bank was literally putting notices on our door saying, "This is about to be our property if you don't send us some money." So my dad said, "No, what have you got?" And Daryl said, "Well, I'll tell you what, buddy, you send me your information on the oil deal and I'll sign it, and I'll send you some information on my deal." Back in the day, we didn't have the internet, we didn't have Energy 526, you know, and all these ways to present the business. So my dad sent him the information, he sent it back signed, but he did not send him any information about the business that he was talking about. So also back then, they didn't have cell phones, so every day for 2 weeks my dad called this guy over and over and over again, until finally 2 weeks later he answered the phone and he said, "You said you were going to send me some information on that long distance deal you were doing." And Daryl said, "Well, little buddy, I got bad news for you." He said, "What?" He said, "I looked up Xcel phone service in DeBary, Texas, and you can't have Xcel long distance in DeBary, Texas, so I don't know if it'll work for you." My dad said, "I don't need a phone, fool. I'm talking to you on one. It works just fine. I need money. I want you to overnight me that package." I mean, even for 2 weeks, he'd been calling that guy. So when the package came in, he overlooked that, and he said, "You know what? I'm going to build $1 million electric or long distance business, and I'm going to get this done, and I'm going to save my family." So like I said, he was in a position where he could just bail out, he could take welfare, he could lose the house, he could lose the cars, he could lose everything in our life, and he could let us be demoralized and broke, but he decided that he wasn't going to do that, and every single day he got up to go get it done. So once he found out about Xcel, he hit the road, Doug. I mean, he was working really hard, and there were times that he'd leave for a week, 2 weeks at a time. And he would come home, and whenever he came home, he would bring a pack of M&Ms for my sister and a pack of Skittles for me. And he would look me in the eyes and say, "Son, I hate being gone and I hate being away, but I can tell you sometimes you have to make sacrifices in your life if you want to succeed and provide for your family. And I don't like doing this, but sometimes you have to make sacrifices." And he taught me that every couple of weeks whenever he would come back. Sometimes you have to make sacrifices. Sometimes you have to make sacrifices. So I just watched him. I mean, you know what I'm saying? Like, people that walk the talk or talk the talk, we always say watch what people do and not what they say. Well, my dad was doing it. He was out there getting it done, making sure we didn't lose our house. And he came home one day and he got the mail. And back then, coding checks were paid monthly, not like our deal, they're paid weekly. But he got home and he was checking the mail and he was going through his letters, and he got to the last check and he opened it and he started crying. And I didn't know what he was doing, but I always sat in his office whenever he opened his mail, whenever he came home. And I looked at him and I said, "Why are you crying, Dad?" And he couldn't talk, but he handed me the check. And it was for just over $5,000. It was a coding check in that business, which is like the weekly bonuses here in Ambit Energy. But I looked at that check, and I looked back at him, and I held it up, and I said, "That's sacrifice." I couldn't say my R's yet, but I knew what sacrifice was. And I said, "That's sacrifice." And the reason that my dad was crying was that coding check was the exact amount that we were three ranch payments behind, about to lose our house, about to lose our ranch, about to lose everything. And Xcel Telecommunications and the work ethic that my dad put into it saved my family's life. And I watched him make those sacrifices. I watched him do things that weren't easy. I watched him battle back from being a total financial failure into someone who, again, had made it financially. And at the end of the day, Doug, you just can't replace that kind of an example in your life. And I don't care how hard I get hit, I don't care how hard something is, I don't care how bad it gets, nobody's ever gonna knock me into a position that I won't get back up and tear back into it with my teeth, because I had that kind of example, I had that kind of reality that was set for me as a young man. It's kind of like the Rocky Balboa speech, you know, it's not about how hard you can hit, it's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward, how much you can take. And you know, life's not always going to be rainbows and butterflies, but you just got to get it done. And my dad was a shining example of that, and he just never quit. He just never quit. So that's number one. My dad is the man, and, you know, whenever you're built with that example, now – he's a senior consultant in Ambit Energy. He actually is my sponsor. I'm an executive, so I've moved a little bit farther along in the business, but I had that example to turn me into the man that I am, and ultimately, that's what it's all about. Your life is a culmination of what you become and then how you execute on what you become. So the second mentor that I want to talk about is a man by the name of Ray Mani. He is an absolute bone-crushing individual, and for a long time I've been building this business, and I'd gotten some great guidance from Steve Thompson. He helped me go all the way to executive, and I'd gotten some great guidance from literally just hundreds of leadership people out there in network marketing inside of Ambit Energy. But I was looking for somebody who had applied a systems-based approach to building a large network marketing organization that, you know, was systematic in its nature. And I finally ran into Ray Mani, and he was open enough to share with me the EC Factory systems and just how he built his business and how he operated on a daily basis. And I was really fortunate to get to spend some time with him on a personal level and just watch what he did. And again, just like watching my dad, you know, do what he needed to do and make the sacrifices that he needed to make, I watched a man that, in my opinion, is a leader among leaders, sacrifice on a daily basis and execute systems into his organization that would empower people to do the same thing. So right now, with the example from my dad to never quit and never give in, and the example from Ray Mani to be a leader among leaders and have a systems-based approach that would empower your people to achieve success, I honestly have some pretty big visions for what I'm going to do in Ambit Energy, and I'm just really grateful to be where I am and have had the insight that I've had from these great people.
Yeah, that's great. That is great stuff, and now it's time to go out and apply those lessons learned and those systematic approaches in your EC code. You get your 5 ECs, and then you'll be an NC. So that's exciting, man. That really, really is great stuff. Now, so we've talked about a lot of really, great, deep subjects, you know, to be honest with you, they really are. And we've talked about some of the good times, if you will, but let's do this. Let's talk about maybe at some point during your Ambit career, one of the bad times. You know, I don't know what it might be, but something that came up that you struggled with. Maybe, I know you've kind of got that never quit mentality, but maybe something that kind of rocked you a little bit and you thought, man, I don't know about all this. I may want to do something different or whatever. Have you had anything like that during your career in Ambit?
Oh, yeah, man, there have been so many of them. I can tell you a brief story about that, and it'll kind of give you an idea of some of the struggles that I went through. But originally, whenever I found out about Ambit, I thought that it was kind of a luck thing. You know, if you went out there and sponsored enough people or talked to enough people, that you might run into a superhero, and if that superhero went nuts, then you'd make a bunch of money. You know, that's what I figured network marketing was. So I went out there and I just kind of set my sights on sponsoring people, and I figured that if I sponsored enough people, I would win. So there was a point in my business, Doug, that I had promoted to regional consultant. It wasn't pretty. I sponsored 5 of my 6 people to get there and really wasn't having organizational growth, but I had promoted. And then I had sponsored 11 of my 18 people to go senior. I got into my senior coded organization. I sponsored a bunch more people. And I looked up one day, Doug, and I had personally sponsored 25 people into my business, and I had 30 people on my team. I had no growth. I had no leadership. I had no residual income. Basically, had a $25 a month residual income that barely paid for my websites. And in all honesty, this is a couple years into the business, and I felt like a total dismal failure. I felt I just felt pathetic, man. I felt like I wasn't getting it done. And to tell you the truth, I kept going to the events. I kept going to the meetings. I kept going to stuff. But I hated it. I hated how I felt, because every time I walked into these rooms, I'd see these people that were making more money than me. I'd see these people that were making their promotions faster than me. I'd see these people that were getting it done better than me. And I got a really bad case of comparitis, is what I call it. And I just felt terrible about myself, and I just felt like a total loser. And it was then that I shifted my mentality from go sponsor a bunch of people and hope that somebody does something, into a systems-based approach, because I don't know about you, Doug, but I've seen the slide where it says three through seven levels will pay you a five-figure residual income. Well, I'd gotten 25, and none of them had gotten three. You know what I'm saying? So I just wasn't duplicating. It wasn't working. So that's whenever I shifted into a systems-based approach where I said, you know what? It's not about what I can do. It's about what I can duplicate. And I really started to study how the top income earners were building their business. And I really just kind of threw out the ideas of luck and started to adopt the idea of skill, and I intentionally began to develop my skill set. So the next challenge came whenever I started building the business. I figured out how to create synergy by building in depth. I figured out how to get people promoted to regional and senior consultant, basically just by working really hard. I built the seniors that I needed to go to the executive position. Basically had moved from the point of struggle of not having a team into having a team and having, you know, a couple few hundred people on the team. But then I hit another challenge in my business where I had reached a position where I had hundreds of people join the organization. Things were looking really good. You know, I was approaching the executive position, and basically I lost momentum, and my team just kind of fell flat on its face because ultimately I was kind of the driving factor that was out there. I was still pushing really, really, really hard, but ultimately I bottlenecked my organization to where kind of everything had to come through me, you know, if my people were going to be successful. And ultimately what happened was it was a completely different level of failure, because now you've got hundreds of people that are kind of dependent on you to help you develop a sales and marketing channel. And I lost momentum, and I felt like I had failed all those people, because as a leadership person, I'm supposed to be able to help them achieve what I've achieved. So essentially, I just asked myself, you know, are these people going to be able to execute what I did? And the reality is, it was just going to be a challenge because I hadn't empowered them well enough with systems. I hadn't empowered them well enough to achieve what they wanted to achieve. So that was another big struggle. So you see what I'm saying? These struggles continue to evolve. It's not just 25 people personally sponsored with 30 on your team feeling like a total loser. Then sometimes you get 250 people on your team and they're not moving as fast as you want them to move, or you feel like they should be moving. And then as the leadership person that's kind of at the helm of that ship, you again feel like a total dismal failure loser, you know? So then I started to overcome that by implementing systems and started to execute and help people move faster. And I hit the executive position, obviously, but now I feel so fortunate to have been able to develop systems and help people with an empowered mindset to move forward in their business, to the point that I've actually had it happen where I had hundreds of people join my organization months, you know, and it's just nice for me to see that people are at least getting the information that they need to succeed. So I don't feel like I'm failing those people nearly as badly. But you see what I'm saying? Essentially, the progression of being a dynamic, highly paid leader in network marketing is not just about overcoming the simple early struggles. It's about continuing to overcome larger and larger and larger struggles. So essentially, it kind of goes like this. And in the beginning, it's like, how do I get two or three people on my team? Then it's, all right, how do I get those two or three people to do something? Then it's, all right, I've gotten these two or three people to do something and those two or three people to do something. I've got 20 or 30 people on my team. How do I keep momentum in that little organization? Then how do I get them promoting through the compensation plan? And then you get those 200 or 300 people, or those 20 or 30 people moving. And then you start to build. So essentially in my mind, you kind of build in blocks. So originally I was looking for two or three people. Then I was trying to build little pockets of 20 or 30 people. And now I'm executing at the level that whenever I sponsor somebody, I'm thinking, all right, how can I get 200 or 300 people in this person's organization as quickly as I possibly can? You know what I'm saying? Within 3 to 6 months, how can I do that? So then you start to develop that mentality around, okay, well, how do I help this person develop 200 or 300 people in their organization? And now my mentality has shifted one more time, and that's why I've been seeking out the mentorship of people like Ray and these other top income earners that have systems approached, because now my challenge, Doug, is how do I bring somebody in and help them systematically establish a sales channel to 2,000 or 3,000 people. You see what I'm saying? So it's 2 or 3, then 20 or 30, then 2 or 300, then 2 or 3,000. And then I know that once I start hitting the 2 or 3,000 by helping somebody be able to do that and do it quickly, then I'm going to shift my sights into, all right, well, how do I do 20 or 30,000? You see what I'm saying? So it's just kind of the mentality, but you shatter through these barriers and you keep moving forward. I've been financially free for some time now, so I've kind of got time to goof off and piddle with this thing. You know what I mean? But for me, I can't goof off and piddle and play small because my brain doesn't work like that. So essentially, I kind of feel the same way that I did back in the day when I was struggling to go to regional. I feel the same kind of way going to national. I'm just figuring out a different set of problems and how to move through that. So hopefully that helps people. It empowers you and inspires you, because I can tell you, no matter what level that you're in your business and whether you feel like a success or you feel like a failure, I promise you a lot of these top leaders have gone through the same thing, and we're in some version of it ourselves, you know, in our current businesses and what we're trying to do. So with that, buddy, I'll turn it back to you for any further comments.
Yeah, man, I'll tell you what, this is great, great information. And, you know, we always love to hear the success stories, but it's good to hear, you know, the struggles too, so that we figure out how do we progress through those things. And, you know, it's hard to believe, but we are approaching an hour. And so, Jordan, I want to be respectful of your time because you've invested so much with us today. And if we could, just kind of in closing out, you know, let's just for just a moment, let's just talk about, I know you're high energy, intense, you know, hitting it hard. But whenever it comes to recharging, what are some things that you do just to kind of recharge and get back on track again?
Oh, absolutely. Well, I think the most important thing to do, Doug, is to really remember and focus on what's important in your life. Sometimes we get caught up with making money, and sometimes we get caught up with cars and houses and paying the bills and doing these things. But at the end of the day, I'll give you an example. I actually just was super fortunate to have proposed to my girlfriend, and she said yes, thank God. But her name's Vanessa, so she went from being my girlfriend to being my fiance. And it's funny because in my document, The Life I Choose, I had all of these visions that I wanted to have in my life, the types of cars that I wanted to drive, the type of a house that I wanted to live in, the type of money that I wanted to have in my bank account, you know, whether I wanted to be a millionaire or this and that. And it was funny because before I met her, I just kind of had it in my mind that I was doing it all for her and our future family. You know, even though I didn't know her yet, I was executing on that basis because it was important to me to provide a particular type of lifestyle for her. Now, whenever I found her, what's amazing is a lot of the things that were in my document were not nearly as important to her as I anticipated they would be. She, you know, I asked her one day, I said, baby, would you live with me in a trailer? Just joking. And she said, honey, I would live with you in a tent. You know what I'm saying? So at the end of the day, sometimes we get so focused on that million-dollar house or that Lexus or that Maserati or that, you know, big F-350 pickup truck and these things and put enough money away for my kids to go to college and doing all these things that it's easy to forget about what's most important in your life, because at the end of the day, for me, Vanessa is the most important thing in the world. So what's really important? All right. So is it important for me to go execute a level that I can get her $1 million house and get her, you know, a $200,000 car? You know, so if I get so focused on that I stop focusing and remembering what really is important, then I actually can risk that relationship and I can risk potentially losing Vanessa. Now, that's definitely not something that will ever happen. But the reason that it won't happen is I've done a really good job as a human being, in my opinion, of recharging by bringing my focus back into what's important. So essentially, if they took my house, if they took my cars, if they took all the money in my bank account, if somebody took my Ambit Energy business away from me and I had no income and I was sitting dead with dead nothing on the side of the road with just a shirt on my back and barely having that, you know, people are trying to come get the shirt off my back, would my life really be all that terrible if I still had her? and I still had the relationship that I have with her? Or would it really be that terrible if I still had parents out there that loved me, and my family out there that loved me, and my friends out there that loved me and cared about me? You know, would my life really be that bad if everything was stripped of stuff? And whenever I do that, I literally do that, kind of I'll go into the worst case scenario on purpose sometimes just to remind myself of what's important. And what I like to do whenever I'm recharging is I like to just strip everything away mentally. I like to get out of the stuff, out of the cars, out of the house, out of the vacations, out of this, out of that, and just strip down to what's really bare and raw in my life, which is my connection to my source and my positive nurturing of my relationships in my life. And whenever I get down there and I think about my friends and I think about my spouse and I think about my family, I just realize how great my life is. No matter how much money I have or no matter how much success I have, the things that are important are there and they're constant. So what's kind of ironic about it is by thinking about what my life is like if I stripped everything, it actually inspires me to go work harder because I realize that I love these people so much and I care about my relationships so much and I care so much about that part of my life that it becomes important for me again to go execute at the level that I know I can execute because I believe that those people in my life deserve it. So with that, I'll turn it back to you, man. But for me to recharge, I just really kind of hone in on what's important, and I try to spend time with those people. Okay, so right now I'm in California with Vanessa, and we're going to the beach every single day and kind of decompressing, getting charged up for ambition, because you know it's important to for me to focus on my relationships and what's important. And I'm spending time with my grandparents, who are the best people in the whole world, and that's what it's all about, man. So for me to recharge, I just strip everything away and I go and I spend time with the people that I love the most.
Man, that's great stuff, and we'll end it there. I mean, it was a great information that you shared with us, and I appreciate you the level of depth that you went into with the relationships and all of those things, kind of peeling back the covers just a little bit, giving us a glimpse inside your life and you know kind of what you do to be so successful. And it really, like I said, we've met several times at different events and different things, and it's good to really hear some of these things and how you've been successful. So I really appreciate you coming on.
Absolutely, Doug. I appreciate you, brother. Thanks a lot for having me on. It means a lot.
Yes, sir. Absolutely. Well, I'll tell you what, guys. Remember, you can make excuses or you can make money, but you cannot make both. So go out there and be ambitious.
You've been listening to Ambit Energy's Ambitious 50, presented by the Ambitious Radio Network and hosted by serial entrepreneur Doug Parker. Join us weekly as we have engaging conversations with Ambit leaders on topics that can be applied to your business immediately after listening. Like what you've heard? Listen to other interviews at ambitiousradio.com or subscribe on iTunes.